I was impatient that we hadn't entered that war sooner. As you know, we really didn't get into the heavy fighting until after the war had been on for several years. And I was an internationalist then, as I am today, and I thought that we ought to be involved in stopping these three Axis powers members, Tojo in Japan, Mussolini in Italy, and most of all Hitler in Germany. He was literally a madman, a genius, but sometimes geniuses can go mad, and I thought he was a threat to Western civilization. So when I finally got a chance to volunteer, I volunteered for the Army Air Corps and went on to become a bomber pilot. I had a crew of 10 young guys. I had an excellent crew. I suppose every pilot thinks that, but I had very good people, and I demanded a lot from them. I never took any excuses for anything I asked them to do. I always tried to be fair, but I had complete faith in that crew. Every pilot that went into combat, bomber pilots, every one of them had to fly the first five missions as a co-pilot with an experienced crew that had been there for several months. I was assigned to Howard Serbeck of Seattle, Washington. He was a marvelous pilot. And so I flew the first five missions without my crew, but flying with his crew. The average crew never got beyond 17 missions before they went down. We had to fly 35. If I had known when I got to 17 that that was the average, it would have been a lot harder to fly the remaining 18, because you saw people getting knocked down every day, planes blowing up and all that sort of thing. But I can tell you this truthfully, I never had a day when I wasn't glad I was glad I was there, because I believed in what we were doing. Linz, Austria. I'd been there before, and it was heavily defended. It was Hitler's hometown. That's where he was born. That's where he grew up as a boy. Linz, Austria, L-I-N-Z. So on my last mission, they told me I was going back to Linz. I just couldn't believe it. So we get over the target, and it was incredible. I've never seen so many anti-aircraft guns in one place. What the Germans were doing, the Russians were driving them back out of Russia, but they were pulling the anti-aircraft guns with them. General Patton and the Americans were pushing them from the west, and they were pulling the guns back. So they had them pretty well concentrated by the end of the war. They did what was called a box-type defense of the target, and they would have maybe several hundred anti-aircraft guns shooting into a box that was roughly 2,000 feet across the side and 2,000 feet deep. And that was calibrated to be about right where the bombers were. They could calibrate our altitude very easily. So when you flew into something like that, you couldn't see how you could get through. They were just solid black. They just kept firing all the time, and each gun fired in a different circle. It was terrifying. The only thing that made a little variety from the black were these flashes of bright red when the shell would explode, and then you'd see that red thing, and it's in the smoke and everything. It was a terrifying thing to fly into. One of our guys was hit over the target. He had a piece of shrapnel that went in right here in his leg, traveled up his leg, clear up to the buttocks, and lodged there. He was in terrible pain. So we had him. We had another guy with a broken ankle, And they knocked out our hydraulic system, our brakes, our flaps, our landing gear, everything that operated on hydraulics. We lost two engines from damage over the target. So we're flying with one engine out and one prop feathering, and then it got on fire. Once a fire begins in the engine of a B-24, you've got 5 minutes before it burns through a 3/4-inch steel firewall that protects the gas tanks from the fire. You got 5 minutes, and then it blows everything. So I'm looking at my watch here and trying to figure out what to do. I finally decided to dive. Nobody told me to do that, but I decided to dive, and I'll be darned if that didn't blow out the fire, the speed. So we got the fire out, but then what do you do when you get back to the base? I decided to do something else that an older pilot had told me, and that is to hook two parachutes on the girders that support the waist guns in the rear of the plane, to hook those parachutes to those two steel girders, and then as we hit the ground, throw the parachute out through the waist windows and pull the ripcord so it'll flare up. I didn't make a particularly good landing that day because I didn't want to take a chance on coming in short. I knew we didn't have the power to climb out of that, so I came in, as the Air Force would say, too hot. We hit the end of the runway, but at far too high a speed. But those parachutes really worked. They really pulled it to a slow speed. We rolled into a ditch at the end of the runway. I don't know how we got through there. When we landed, we had 110 holes in that plane, pieces of flak, some of them as big as your fist, some of them a baseball, some of them a golf ball, some of them you could throw a cat through. But we got on the ground, and the fire engines were out there, and the ambulance and everything. That was my last mission. The war ended the next day.
If you'd like to see more of this interview, tune in for a conversation with former Senator George McGovern, Sunday, November 11th at 3 Central, 2 Mountain Time. You can hear more South Dakota World War II stories or find out how to share your own World War II story at our website. Go to sdpb.org and click on the Homefront logo or call us at 800-456-0766.